Today's episode is brought to you by Wise, the account that helps you manage your money around the world, which is huge for travelers. I've been a customer and a fan for 10 years. The Wise account helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, and they do it all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This service has been so critical for me in my life as a traveler, as a nomad, as somebody living abroad. And you can join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account can help you out on the road at wise.com/travel. That's Wise, WISE.com/travel, or download the app. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
At the beginning, I didn't say I'm going to spend the next 5 years living in a camper van. It was just for a summer, you know? So I said, I'm just going to do this for a summer. And then if I hadn't liked it, I could have just gone back, you know, to Auckland. So I think, you know, that's a, you know, go do it. Like, don't just keep thinking about it and dreaming about it. Like, if you can make it happen and you want to, then go do it. But, you know, think about that. Like, can you find a way to sort of start small? And I had a meeting. So you just pull over on the side of the road and you do your meeting and then you keep driving. Or, you know, I had days where I'd be like out kite surfing and I just like come in and I pull the wetsuit top down and I put a proper, you know, top on and I jump on a call for half an hour and then reverse. And right, because you have your home and your office with you all the time, it's just so flexible, you know, you can just like just do that bit of work and then go back to, you know, the fun stuff.
That is Lisa Jansen, today's guest, sharing one of the many perks of the camper van lifestyle in New Zealand. Lisa's a digital nomad, author, and long-term traveler based in New Zealand. She has been nomadic for over 6 years and spent almost 5 years traveling in her camper van around New Zealand. So you know that she knows a lot of the off-the-beaten-path places to visit. And she shares her list today. And I love that she took this list seriously, as you can hear in this clip.
And I really try to focus on the sort of hidden gems, right? So anyone, if you come to New Zealand, you know, I think some of the popular spots, a lot of the popular spots are popular for a reason, you know, so don't disregard them. But here's sort of some of the, you know, less talked about ones.
So you're getting it all today. You're getting a peek into the long-term travel lifestyle in New Zealand, tips and tricks around that, and camper vanning, and safety, and solo travel, and finding community, all this great stuff. And then you're going to hear about where you can go. And it's all happening right now in this episode. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here. And welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey there, it's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears. Today, this is the show to help you travel the world on your terms to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. And New Zealand is a place I've had on my bucket list forever. I've always wanted to go there. I will get there one day. I promise you that. I'm laying down the gauntlet. I'm throwing down the gauntlet. You don't lay it down. You have to throw the gauntlet. I'm throwing it today. And I'm going to say I will be setting foot in New Zealand one day. And whether you've been there or you're perhaps planning a trip there, maybe someplace you want to go in the future, plenty going on in this episode in terms of practical tips, advice, you know, places to go, as we talked about at the top. And Lisa, she's got a wealth of experience and knowledge traveling around New Zealand, where she lives. And she's also an author. She wrote a book called Life Done Differently. We talk about that. The book is about deliberately prioritizing a nomadic lifestyle, favoring travel and van living over conventional, familial, and career pursuits. You can learn more about that at lifedonedifferently.com. Get ready for a fun one. And stick around on the back end. I am going to share a reminder, something that Lisa said in this interview that really reminded me of something not to do in life, because doing it can have severe consequences. You'll learn more about that on the back end. For now, please enjoy my conversation with Lisa, and I will see you on the other side, my friend. Cheers. What do you want to talk about today? No, I'm kidding. We have a bit of an agenda, I guess. But yes. I mean, you just told me your whole life. So share a fun fact about yourself. You said your whole life is a fun fact. So here we go.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't had a fixed address or fixed home in 6 years. So I think that's a fun fact. You know, I've moved more times than I can count. So, yeah.
I feel you. Yeah. I didn't have a fixed address for 10 years at one point. I had a place where my mail, you always have to have a place where your mail goes, you know? There's some of the practical things.
Oh, totally. We've got a great service here in New Zealand now that, you know, basically scans your mail and then emails it to you, which is like awesome for, you know, all the paperwork that I'd rather have as email than as a piece of paper anyway. But yeah, or, you know, friends' addresses for packages and stuff.
Yes, those are important. Well, you're an immigrant, I guess. Are you a citizen now?
I'm a permanent resident, unfortunately. So I was born in Germany. And unfortunately, as of right now, Germany makes it very tricky to have dual citizenship. They are discussing that and hopefully it might change. But right now, if I wanted to be a New Zealand citizen, I basically would have to give up my German passport. And as a permanent resident in New Zealand, I've got almost the same rights as a citizen. So really, there's no reason to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I had the same situation here in Norway, and it was just until recently that I was able to get citizenship because they changed the laws, but it was the same. I would have had to give up citizenship in the U.S. before I could get it here, but now they allow it. So, you know, you got to keep your fingers crossed, you know?
Yeah,
you
yeah. Apparently, it's sort of a done deal and just a matter of time, which, you know, I'm ready. I'm like going to be one of the first one who's got her paperwork, you know, submitted. I'd love to have a New Zealand passport just to, you know, I've been here 17 years. So New Zealand's home. I love it. I feel a lot more like a Kiwi than I feel German these days. So I'd love to have the passport to match the feeling.
You sound a lot more like a Kiwi, too.
Well, I think most Kiwis would disagree with that. I think I just have a very funny, weird combination of accents that most people struggle to place. So when they hear that I live in New Zealand, they just assume that it's a Kiwi accent. But Kiwis hear that I'm not, a born and bred New Zealander.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I should say formally, Lisa Jansen, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend. Congrats on your new book, by the way, Life Done Differently, which we'll talk about today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Sounds like you've been around New Zealand quite a bit. And as a seasoned traveler in New Zealand, I thought, yeah, well, today we're going to talk about some of the hidden gems, the places that maybe the locals like to go, maybe perhaps alternatives to some of the popular places. I don't know. I haven't seen the list. I do always love talking about camper vanning in New Zealand, too, because it's something I've never done. And you know, sometimes people listening, like they know of it, but they don't know the nuts and bolts, or they might be hearing it for the first time. Maybe some of you that have done it have done it before. So maybe we get some new tips if you're doing it again. So anyway, we got a lot to talk about today. So yeah, thanks for coming on. Yeah, you grew up in Lingen, Germany. I mean, what does your family think about you being so far away? They can't be thrilled about that.
I think it's a bit of both. So obviously, you know, they'd like to have me closer. But also, I think they just, you know, they see how happy I am here and how amazing New Zealand's been for me. So, you know, I think that kind of makes it easier. And I think my mom's a bit jealous sometimes. You know, I think she would sort of love to go and travel and see the world a lot more. So, yeah, it's one of the few downsides of living in New Zealand is that it is just so far away. But, you know, that's life.
Yeah, I mean, that's the choice you made, I guess. Did you feel like when you were growing up that at some point you were going to leave and it was going to be far away? Like, did you have an inkling of that? Or did it just happen over time?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I had an inkling. I actually think that, you know, as a sort of, you know, 18, 19 year old, I would have said that, oh, I want to spend some time overseas, but I'd come back to Germany and live in Germany. But I think, you know, looking back, I often say I'm one of those people who took a bit longer to, you know, find herself and her place in the world. And just as a teenager, kind of, you know, struggled, wasn't very happy. A lot of, you know, self-doubt and all of that sort of stuff. And New Zealand, yeah, I was 22 when I moved here. And it was kind of that blank page, you know, and that opportunity. And it's been really amazing for me. So in that way, you know, I'm not surprised. Looking back now, I'm not surprised that I didn't stay in Germany, but created a new life somewhere else. But I wouldn't have predicted it as a, you know, teenager.
Yeah. The idea of having a blank page to work with is kind of refreshing. Like, you can certainly, moving to another country, that's almost built in, right? But there are other ways to do that in life, right? Some of it could be just mindset, right? If it's just like, hey, yeah, I think that's why people get excited around the new year too. It feels like a blank page in a way.
Totally. So, you know, like moving countries is a bit extreme. And I didn't, you know, originally I came to New Zealand as part of my study. So I was still at university and it was supposed to be 1 year, you know, study abroad, student exchange as you do. And then I just ended up extending and it's like, I'll do another semester and then I'll do another year. And then I finished my degree here and it was just easier to find a job here. And so, you know, it wasn't sort of that instant, New Zealand's definitely home and I'm moving there permanently. It's just, I came here and I loved it and ended up staying.
It's so funny. I had a guest recently, a buddy of mine, who he had this whole trip planned to go around the world. And his first or second stop, I think it was his first stop, was New Zealand. And then he didn't take the rest of the trip. He stayed there for like many, like multiple years. And I'm like, what is going on in New Zealand, you guys? I need to get down there.
It's definitely a very common story down here. Like, you meet so many people who came for 6 months or a year and just never left again.
What do you miss about Germany? It must be some things you miss.
Family, mostly. Yeah, I think that's really, you know, what at this point, you know, it comes down to, because it's been so long now. So, you know, New Zealand is so familiar and all my friends are here and my whole life is here. In the early years, you know, there would have been other things like just the familiarity of Germany and, you know, the culture and those sort of things. But these days, yeah, it mostly just comes down to family.
What about the bread? You guys have really good bread in Germany.
It's true, actually. Yeah, see, it's those little things, you know. And I get, my mom sends, you know, once or twice a year, she sends care packages with like my favorite chocolates and those sort of things. So
it's just such a reminder, you know, people listening and myself included, when I even passed through the airport in Germany, or like I got to go to Germany this past summer, to me, it's like, you know, it's a cultural experience. Of course, I mean, you're eating the sausages and you're doing all the German things and blah, blah, blah. And for you, it's just like, oh, home, like there's nothing exotic about it. It's just so funny how dependent on where you grew up.
Yeah, so true. So true. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least for me, one of the big draws for New Zealand is the nature. I wonder if that was something that's important to you in your life.
Definitely. And, you know, funnily enough, like it wasn't so much when I came here. Like when I came here, I definitely wasn't the outdoorsy, you know, person or type. But now it's a huge part of my life. And I do think it's a huge part of why I fell in love with it. You know, there's just something about being in a beautiful place and being, you know, there's lots of nature here. You know, the population density is really low. And even, you know, right now I happen to be in Auckland, which is New Zealand's biggest city. So, you know, there is, I think, like 1.4 million people living here, which is a small city in other parts of the world, right? But even here, there's lots of green, lots of beaches. You know, you can always see the ocean. And I think there's just, it just does something, I think, to your like mental health and well-being to be in a beautiful, you know, natural environment. And so now I'm like totally your outdoorsy person. And, you know, I hike and cycle and paddleboard and kite surf and try to surf. I do a really poor job at it. But, you know, I think you just get into it when you live in a place like this.
Do you live in your camper van all the time now? Tell me about your life. You said you've been nomadic, no fixed address. What does that look like? I'm just curious. You know, I think it's always good to get behind the curtain on this stuff. You can see the Instagram photos for people doing this, that, or the other, but it doesn't really paint the picture. That's why I love the podcast. We can dive deep on it. But, you know, you have to make a living. You have to find a place to work. You know, it's not always easy if you're living in a camper van. I'm just wondering, lifestyle-wise, what has been the setup for you sort of over the last 6 years in terms of daily life?
Yeah, so basically, yeah, almost exactly 6 years ago, I set off in my camper van and I spent the next almost 5 years full-time living in it, traveling around. And during that time, look, to be honest, like it's really hard to sort of say like what every day looked like, because part of the lifestyle is just, it's so different and so diverse. And
well, were you working full time or were you working for yourself? Now let's start there.
Yeah. So I work as a marketing freelancer, which, you know, basically I've got a few different clients and I'm like an outsourced marketing manager for them. And so that, you know, gives me a lot of flexibility. I've got some meetings to go to, you know, so I do sometimes have to plan my day around work. And it's also certainly been times over the last, you know, 6 years where work was the top priority and I would work, you know, 40 and more hours a week. But then there've been other times where I would work, you know, 10, 15 hours a week and spend a lot more time exploring and sort of, you know, to an extent, I control that, but there's also an element of, you know, when you're a freelancer, your reputation, your network's everything. So, you know, when clients need work done, then sometimes, you know, the fun has to be paused and I have to deliver work to make sure that, you know, I keep that good reputation and network going. But yeah, I'm really lucky with work. You know, I've got the marketing work and then I'm also a writer. So I kind of got two income streams that, you know, really lean themselves to being, you know, a digital nomad and traveling around.
When you have a heavy work week like that, would you then rent an apartment for a week or something like that? Or, you know, would you get out of the camper van and station up somewhere for a month? Or how would you do that?
Yeah, what I tried to do that worked quite well for me for a couple of years is I do a bit of house sitting over winter, you know, kind of good time of the year to sort of get out of the van for a few weeks. And then I would try to time that to do more work. But I actually also got really good at working from the van and just, you know, had sort of my little setup there. And that worked really well for me too. I actually really enjoyed working from the van. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, not everybody can do that. I mean, I would probably have a hard time working in a small space like that. But yeah, maybe you can send us some pictures of the van, of the inside. We can post it up in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that freelancing is, I've always said, becoming a service-based freelancer, to me, that's probably the easiest way to go location independent, you know, quickly. Because you're just like, you're you. You don't even really need a website. You can, if you have a network or you can network on LinkedIn or, you know, there's all sorts of things you can do to get business, but you're just, you're there. You're like, I can do this thing. Here's how much it costs. And then bam.
Yeah.
You can do it from anywhere.
Especially, you know, I'd say like, especially if you have, you know, experience and skills in an area that's in demand, you know, then yeah, totally agree. It's yeah, it's actually been like, I was surprised. Like when I first made this decision to go live and travel in my van, I had a, you know, full-time job and I told my boss at the time and I said, this is what I want to do. And I was sort of, you know, resigning essentially. And then he said to me, he's like, oh, why don't you like work just like 15 hours a week for us remotely for summer and we'll just like see how that goes. And then from there, you know, just work found me. And I was, you know, initially really surprised how many companies and how many people were just completely fine with me, you know, living the way I do. And everyone always loved it. You know, in meetings, the first question is always, oh, Lisa, where are you today? You know, and everyone really gets on board with it. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Because I mean, I had a fear going in to when I was running a company and I was traveling in Asia at one point. I thought, what are my clients going to think? I have to keep this a secret. It makes you stand out in a way. Also, that's interesting that your boss asked you if you could work remotely. Usually it's the other way around. But so you never know, you know, it's always good to ask. I mean, maybe you have built in ability to freelance. I'm speaking to the listener now. Maybe there's somebody that's like, if they just asked, maybe it could actually be an option. You know, 5 years is no small amount of time to live in a camper van. So I know you have some advice to share. And let's do a little bit of like a camper vanning around New Zealand 101, which I think we have to start with. I know a bit about this because I've read about it quite a lot over the years, but there are generally like the marketplaces where you can buy the van, first of all, and then there's the resell places. I guess maybe they're the same places. So it's like, I don't know how to break this down. What I mean, I guess I kind of do. First, you have to buy the van, then you have to kind of pick the right one. And so that would be some advice there and on you know, budget and buying the right one, we could start there.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, anyone who, like, if you come to New Zealand for like a couple of weeks or, you know, maybe even 3 weeks, then consider renting one. You know, it's just so much easier and hassle-free. And, you know, it feels expensive. But yeah, you know, it's just hassle-free. And if something happens to the van, then the rental company is just going to give you a new one and you're off again and those sort of things. If you come for a few months, then definitely worth thinking about buying one because, you know, renting would get really expensive. So the places to buy, we have a website called Trade Me, which is essentially our version of eBay. eBay never, you know, got into New Zealand. So we made our own. Trademe.co.nz is the website. And so that's where a lot of camper vans are listed for sale. And then, you know, especially over the last few years, we're also seeing a lot more on Facebook Marketplace. So those would be the, you know, first two places I would go. I think most vans, you know, showing up on either or both of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under $50. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. Yeah, good advice on renting first, too, if you're going for a small amount of time, because you can also test it out, you know, test out the lifestyle. This is unique because you're also working in the van. So, and I think a lot of people at this point, if they're going to buy a van and go down there, especially people listening to this, they might be working at some point or working on a side project or whatever. So setup wise, what are you looking for? Like, what do you definitely want to avoid? And what do you definitely want to have? Let's say like the must haves and the do not haves.
Yeah, so I think the most important thing actually has very little to do with whether you're working or not. So we have something in New Zealand called the Certified Self-Contained Standard, and it is optional, so it's not mandatory. But essentially what it is, you know, a certification that says, yes, your camper van vehicle is self-contained, so you can park somewhere and, you know, leave nothing but footprints and tire marks behind. Unfortunately, over the last few years, the rules around this have gotten very strict. And so especially a lot of the smaller vans that, you know, visitors and backpackers like struggle to meet those requirements. And so that's just something to, you know, be aware of. Essentially, if your camper is not certified self-contained, it limits where you can stay overnight. There's a bunch of places where, you know, you need to have the certification to legally park overnight. But there's also, you know, still plenty of options for, you know, those who don't have it. Like essentially like all, you know, commercial campgrounds welcome you one way or the other. It's mostly the freedom camping sites and, you know, the really low cost ones where a lot of the time they don't have facilities. So they need you to have your own, you know, toilet and rubbish facilities and all that on board. So they, you know, sometimes limit you. So that's something I think really important to be aware of. And I'd recommend anyone considering to, you know, especially buy a camper in New Zealand or rent as well, to just, you know, look into that, do a Google search. The rules are changing quite frequently. So, you know, even what they are right now might not be the case anymore in 6 months. So I would highly recommend, you know, do some research and figure out what the latest is on that front. So you know, where you can and can't park in your camper. So that's the first thing I'd look for. And then from there, like, I think your setup, especially, you know, if you want to work, it kind of really comes down to, you know, different personalities and people. You know, some people want a bit more space and say, oh, you know, if I need to work, then I need to have a proper desk set up and, you know, all those things. Whereas other people are perfectly happy to work, you know, sitting on their bed with their laptop on their knees and do work that way. So, you know, I think that's really something everyone needs to sort of figure out on their own. In terms of internet, you know, if you're working, obviously internet connection is really important. A lot of travelers just hotspot off their phones these days. I don't know if that's just New Zealand or internationally as well. So, you know, a lot of, especially overseas people I've met, they just buy a good data plan on a SIM card and then hotspot. But, you know, Starlink really popular here as well now, because, you know, we've got still quite a lot of like really remote parts of New Zealand where you don't have cell phone coverage and some of the more traditional internet providers don't work. So that's where Starlink comes in handy.
Starlink,
yep. And we also have a couple of, you know, providers. It's one called NetSpeed and one called Wireless Nation that sort of provide, you know, mobile roaming internet plans. So a few options there. But yeah, most people just hotspot off their phones. Or use, you know, libraries or public Wi-Fi at cafes and stuff as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is self-contained just a fancy terminology for having a toilet on board?
It used to be that, you know, it used to be essentially that, you know, you have a toilet and you have a rubbish bin, but it's gotten a lot more stricter. And so, you know, I don't want to bore you with the details because it is quite technical, but basically you don't just need any toilet now, but you need to basically have they call it a plumbed in toilet. So these, you know, we call them porta potties, those like mobile, you know, little camping toilets that a lot of campers used to have, unfortunately don't fit that criteria anymore, which is a total shame. And you know, I'm not liking it, but unfortunately is what it is right now.
What I know this can vary dramatically, but and since you have the websites, that's cool because now people, if they just want to research this trip, they can look into it themselves. But what would you expect to kind of spend for a good solid, it's not going to break down every 5 seconds. Well, you never know that, of course, but like 10 grand, 20 grand?
So I would say, 10. So 10 grand New Zealand is what, like six or seven US. That's probably, you know, what I would say is kind of the starting point. You get vans below that, but then, you know, they're often quite old ones, got a lot of Ks, so you really, you know, do run the risk of something going wrong with it. So that's probably the starting point. And then obviously it's like the sky's the limit, you know, in the other direction.
Yeah, now you can, yeah, of course. Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of the freedom camping, that's the free camping, I'm guessing you kind of find the spot. How do you find, is there an app? Usually these are app centric where people find, you know, this one app that tells them everywhere they can go.
Yeah. So we have a couple. My favorite one is called CamperMate. And it's New Zealand, Australia, and it's awesome. It like shows you all the campsites and also things like supermarkets and, you know, where to find places to fill up fresh water and rubbish stations and some sites and, you know, all sorts of like super useful things. So that's definitely worth getting. Even if you, you know, come to New Zealand and you travel not in a camper van, I think it's still a great app to have because, you know, you still probably need to find a supermarket regularly or, you know, you might be looking for a public toilet or those sort of things. So definitely, you know, good to have.
You know, just a side note, by the way, if you're listening to this and, you know, you just take this in and move on with your day. But if you're like, no, I really want to go to New Zealand and I want to do it pretty soon. Like a good exercise is to actually like download these apps and start looking at vans and like you might be thousands of miles away, but I think that like just going through those types of exercises, sharing with the, you know, off the resources you just shared, it starts to make something real or more real, you know, when you're looking to travel and you're kind of like daydream, you can think about it, but you can also actually dig in a little bit and be like, oh, look, okay, I got this app on my phone. Look at all these places you can stay. Okay, but oh, there's travelers here. You know, I'm sort of some social stuff built in. And then, oh, look at the vans you can get. And hey, you know, I don't know. It's just a good exercise in trip planning, I'd say.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah, totally. And also, you know, the other thing to add to that is, you know, we've got a couple of great Facebook groups. So if you join, you know, one or two of those, You kind of, you know, you get some inspiration from people traveling and, you know, like there's lots of knowledge sharing and tips and everything being passed around. So it's a great, you know, thing to join as well if you're planning on coming and get a bit of a taste for the community and, you know, what's happening.
Cool. Can you share what the groups are that you like that people could...
Yeah, I should have thought about this before I said it. Now I got to remember them off the top of my head. But I think there's one Van Life New Zealand, and then there's another one Motorhome Friends New Zealand. So if you search for those sort of terminologies, you get the, you know, right groups.
Sure. If there are a couple specific ones you really like, just send them to me afterwards, yeah, and we'll put them up in the show notes for you, for everybody.
Awesome.
Listening.
Let's do that.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to get into the top 10 hidden gems, but let's just talk about, I want to hear more about the lifestyle after 5 years. You know, it's a lot of experience. So what is your sort of your best advice for this style of travel? What are the mistakes that people make that people should be aware of?
Yeah. Got my best advice. Honestly, it's like, just do it, but start small if you can. So, you know, for example, like for me, at the beginning, I didn't say I'm going to spend the next 5 years living in a camper van. It was just for a summer, you know? So I said, I'm just going to do this for a summer. And then if I hadn't liked it, I could have just gone back, you know, to Auckland. And so I think, you know, that's a, you know, go do it. Like, don't just keep thinking about it and dreaming about it. Like if you can make it happen and you want to, then go do it. But, you know, think about that. Like, can you find a way to sort of start small so it's not, you know, all or nothing for like the next 5 or 10 years? So I think that's sort of a tip. And in terms of mistakes, I mean, I've made a few, obviously. I think the biggest mistake I see, or the one that sort of has the biggest impact, I guess, long term that I've made and that I've also seen a few others make, is that, you know, you don't do enough due diligence when you buy your van, and then you end up with one, you know. So I've actually had two camper vans because the first one needed to be written off because of rust, which, as I learned afterwards, was a, you know, very common issue with the type of van I had bought. And I clearly hadn't done enough, you know, research, asked enough questions, and, you know, had to learn that the hard way. And I know a bunch of other people who've sort of been in similar situations where, you know, you buy one of those older vans because you want to save money, and then something goes wrong, and then you have a massive, you know, repair, and you maybe haven't budgeted for that. So that's, I think, is sort of the mistake that just, you know, because that can like ruin the dream, you know, overnight very quickly. Whereas most other mistakes are just sort of, you know, afterwards you laugh about it, kind of mistakes. But that one's a big one. So yeah, I've learned that one the hard way.
Okay. So take a small little bite first, try it out for a bit. And then if you want to keep going, keep going. And then the van due diligence, which I suppose there are people you can hire. I think I heard at one point, talking to a guest, that you can hire somebody to do the inspections and things like that before you purchase. Worthwhile, yeah, investment?
Yeah, so we call it a pre-purchase inspection here. Though I think it is important to remember that they don't pick up on everything necessarily, especially with a camper. Like they usually focus on like the mechanical side of things, and because they do those for cars, you know, usually they're not experts at, you know, evaluating camper vans. So I'd recommend to do some research as well and figure out, you know, the brand you're looking at, you know, are there any common issues that they're known for? And then like specifically when you get a pre-purchase inspection done, make sure that they look for that. And, you know, and maybe like try to look yourself if you can, as well. So, you know, that's, yeah, if I had done that, I probably would have not ended up in the situation I was in. So.
Right. Okay. At this point, you probably know, what are the best one or two brands to kind of lock in on?
Look, it's really, really hard to say because a lot of them sort of have, you know, some issues that were then fixed. And so it depends on what year you're looking at. And, you know, there's really like so much to consider that I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't want to answer that question. I can tell you, like, if you buy an older Ford Transit, then have a very, very close look for rust. Because apparently they have a reputation of rusting quite easily, and my one definitely did that. So
okay, all right. Can you share a moment that with traveling by camper van that paints the picture of the perfect camper van day?
Yeah,
you know,
how about, so I'll tell you, I actually, you know, so I, you know, as you mentioned before, wrote a book about my experience, and so there is a section where I sort of describe a typical day. And so It kind of is, you know, I was the day I chose for, you know, that to give that example, I was at in Cape, Castle Point, which is on the North Island, on the east coast of the North Island. And so it was a typical day in the sense that, you know, I got up and always make my coffee and then I read for a bit and, you know, then I get up and have my breakfast. And so on that day, I worked for a few hours in the morning and then I had my lunch. And then in the afternoon, I, you know, went out and I went for a hike up the hills nearby and, you know, enjoyed the views. It's a really cool place, really sort of, kind of surreal landscape. And so, you know, climbed up the hill to take that in and then, you know, walk back down and had my dinner. And then after dinner, I'd, you know, check in on, you know, just a couple of emails or, you know, and some days I'd actually then do a bit more work in the evening, especially if something, you know, important or urgent comes up. And in other days I wouldn't. And so that's sort of a, you know, a typical example. And then of course there, you know, some days I'd go and have an adventure in the morning and then work in the afternoon. And then, you know, some days you just work and other days you just adventure, but that sort of is, you know, the general balance for me anyway. That's what it was like.
Cool. That's great. Yeah. There's a pretty, well, I don't know how popular it is, but there's an exercise you can do that we used to, like I used to do with some coaching students and things like that called your perfect average day. And so you write out your perfect average day. If you search for that, I think Frank Kern, he did like a big talk on this and really lays it out. It's a great exercise because you're not doing like your ideal day where like I'm sitting on the beach all day and I'm, you know, it's your perfect average day when you can like kind of start to put into words, write down what your perfect average day looks like. You start to formulate kind of a vision for the future for yourself in a way. And that's a great example of that. I think, you know, how you describe it, like getting up work, having some coffee, going out, getting some outdoor activities and some adventure, coming back, like that's sounds like your perfect average day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the other thing that, you know, with van life, that's so awesome that I loved about it is that, you know, that was sort of an example of a relatively structured days, but it is so easy. You know, I would have days where I'm like, I was traveling, right? So I was going to a new place and I had a meeting. So you just pull over on the side of the road and you do your meeting and then you keep driving. Or, you know, I had days where I'd be like out kite surfing and I just like come in and I pull the wetsuit top down and I put a proper, you know, top on and I jump on a call for half an hour and then reverse. And right, because you have your home and your office with you all the time, it's just so flexible. You know, you can just do that bit of work and then go back to, you know, the fun stuff.
You're just like, don't pan down. You're going to see half wetsuit, half... half like nice sweater top, half wetsuit. All right, let's get into some of these hidden gems because, like you said, not to harp on it, but 5 years is quite a lot of time to travel around one country in a camper van. So I'm sure you've seen some things, done some things, had some good times, and we want to hear them. Where the locals hang, all the spots we should go. We can use this for some future inspiration.
Awesome. So I made a list earlier today and I started with 25 and I narrowed it down to 10. So,
okay, you took this seriously. All right. I like it.
So here we go. And I really tried to focus on the sort of hidden gems, right? So anyone, if you come to New Zealand, you know, I think some of the popular spots, a lot of the popular spots are popular for a reason, you know, so don't disregard them. But here's sort of some of the, you know, less talked about ones. And I'm going north to south. So we're starting at the very north of New Zealand. So there's a place called Spirits Bay. A lot of tourists go to Cape Ringa, which is the northern, almost the northernmost point, but it's a pretty lighthouse. And so lots of tourists go there. But actually, when you turn off the road on your way to Cape Ringa, you can follow a gravel road for 15 kilometers. And then you get to Spirits Bay, which is just a beautiful remote beach. And, you know, if you want to meet locals, like that's where you can go in, like, you know, January around the holiday times here. It's definitely super popular with locals up there. It's a very important area for Maori, so the New Zealand, the original people of New Zealand. So if you do go, please make sure you respect that and, you know, ask for permission before you cross land and those sort of things. But they're super friendly. So, cool. So that's number one, Spirits Bay. Then we start going south. We're on the west coast now of the North Island. There's a place called Kaiwi Lakes. It's two lakes next to each other, and really cool, amazing colors, like one of those like surreal, like how is it this color kind of places, and really awesome for kayaking or swimming. They do lots of water skiing on the lake. There's a really awesome walkway around the lake, two campsites right on the lake. So, you know, really cool place, and not a lot of tourists sort of know about it. It's very close to, we've got these massive trees, the Kari trees and Kari forests. So a lot of tourists go there, but they just like drive straight past the signs to Kaiwi Lakes. So worth a turn off.
Okay, great. We love places that are worth a turn off. And I also love surreal colored lakes. So perfect.
Cool. So number three is a place called Kawhia. So we're still on the west coast of the North Island. And Kawhia is a like little village. There's not much happening there. But the reason it's on my list is that one of the very popular spots in New Zealand is the hot water beach on the Coromandel, which is on the east coast. A lot of people go there. It's crazy. Like in summer, you know, hot water beach. So it's one of those places where you can dig a hole in the sand and then the hot water comes up and you can basically sit in a, you know, a little spa pool if you have the stamina to dig a big enough hole.
It's a make your own hot tub place.
Pretty much. But it That's gets good... so crowded in summer. And it's like funny to think that there is this place on the other coast called Kawhia that also is a hot water beach and is just nowhere near as popular. So if you want to have a less crowded, you know, hot tub on the beach, then go to Kawhia.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. If you, yeah, that's the place to go to have the make your own hot tub experience. I'm sorry I said that again, but I like the idea. It's like, that's a really good, that just sounds really fun.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Yeah. It's a lot of effort to dig the hole big enough, tell you that. Yeah. But you know, once you've done that, it's pretty cool.
But it's like you earn your hot tub soak, but then you're sweating. Yeah. So then you need to go jump in the water before you get in the hot tub, I guess. Yeah.
But that's, you know, you're right there. So you can just go from the ocean into the hot tub and back and forth, you know?
There you go. The cold plunge hot tub thing. That's great.
And then the tide comes in and it's all gone. Oh, you got to start again.
Love it.
All right, so now we're switching coasts. We're going to the East Coast. We're still on the North Island, but the East Coast has the East Cape. So if you look at the North Island of New Zealand, there is a bit poking out on the east, and that's the East Cape. It's a really cool place to visit for lots of reasons. It's a sort of a bit of a, you know, old school New Zealand feeling, lots of beautiful beaches and little towns and villages. One reason why it is a really cool place to go is because there is the East Cape Lighthouse, and that is often listed as the first place in the world to see the sunrise. So you can go there and, you know, make a really early start and go the hill, lots of stairs to climb, but you get up to the hill and the lighthouse and you can be one of the first people to watch the day begin that day. So...
Wow. I mean, how does that work?
Well, it's just the most, because it's the most eastern point of New Zealand to the time zone. So,
right. Yeah.
So
okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's really cool. Okay. Yeah. That's bragging rights.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to be fair, people argue about it sometimes, you know, but, you know, when you Google it, it's often the East Cape that comes up. It's the first place in the world to see the sun. Cool. And then
these are great recommendations.
Put some effort into this.
I love it. All right. Keep it rolling.
So now we're continuing down the East Coast, but all the way south. So now we're at the very southern end of the North Island, and there's a place called Cape Palliser, which again is a cute little seaside village, and there's a lighthouse you can go up. But what makes it really cool is that, I mean, first of all, it's off the beaten track. Not a lot of tourists go there. And it's super popular with seals. So it's one of those places where, you're like, I kid you not, you know, when you park up, you kind of have to be careful where you step because so many seals on the rocks, and they're really hard to see when they're like lying on the rocks, right? So that if you love seals and you want to see seals, then Cape Palliser is the place to go.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel.
They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning, and you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. Okay, can you send us this list afterwards? Because I want to make sure we get the spellings right. I don't normally post a list in the show notes because then I don't want to ruin the list. But I think in this case, we might have to because the spelling's a little tricky. But don't peek. We'll have to put a warning in the show notes. Like, don't peek if you want to know what these are without, you know, anyway, even if you do peek, you're not going to hear the stories behind them.
Yeah. So. And it's always, you know, there's only so much like a photo or even a video can tell you, like experiencing them yourself is always better.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're hopping on the ferry and we're heading over to the South Island.
All right. You divided this in half perfectly, huh? Five yeah. for the north, five for the south.
Yeah. What can I say?
Nice work. There's that German efficiency.
Exactly. Yeah. Can take the girl out of Germany, but can't take the German out of the girl.
All right, cool. Let's hear it.
All right. So at the fairly far north off the South Island, there is, it's actually two places, but they're on the same road. So Elaine Bay and then French Pass. And so you sort of turn off the main highway and then you get to Elaine Bay first, and then you keep going on to French Pass. And the road to French Pass is often like mentioned as one of the most beautiful roads in New Zealand. And on a nice day, it definitely is. I mean, it's a gravel road, you know, as often like the most of the most beautiful places, you know, take a gravel route to get there. But just really stunning scenery. And then French Pass itself is known for, there is a essentially a pass in the ocean where for whatever reason, the current is super strong. So you can like see like the current rushing through is just crazy speeds. And, you know, there's lots of fishing going on and you see the boats just like struggling to get through, you know, the gap in the between the islands because, you know, it's got something to do with the ocean levels. Like there's a big gap in the, you know, all of a sudden gets a lot deeper, or, you know, don't quote me on this, go look for yourself and read the signs and then you'll know exactly why it's happening. But it's a cool place. So it's a really beautiful drive and then a cool place.
Nice.
To check out.
I like your general travel rule though. What you said, if you take a gravel road, it usually leads to someplace beautiful. Yeah. It's pretty true.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. The best place is at the end of long gravel roads.
There you go. Awesome. We got four more left from my count.
Cool. So number seven, and I think this is maybe on the list because I was recently there and I just like absolutely loved it. So it's a place called Banks Peninsula, which is probably sort of 2/3 down the South Island on the East Coast, close to Christchurch, which is, you know, second biggest city of New Zealand. And it's a peninsula, as the name suggests. And really beautiful, got all these like little bays and fjords and little villages. And then there is a little village called Akaroa, which has, for some weird reason, really strong French influences. So it's like a cute little French influenced city. And yeah, it's just a really cool place to, you know, go for a day trip or, you know, even a few days in a camper van.
Nice. Before we get into the top three here, I have to ask you, what if you're going to eat one meal? Yeah, like there's a meal you have to eat. What is it?
In New Zealand?
Yeah. Oh, is there something like that? Or,
well, look, if you come as a visitor, it probably would have to be a hangi, which is like the Maori traditional food and, you know, how they prepare food. So if you come as a visitor, I'd say like you have to have at least one hangi because it's such a, you know, New Zealand experience. And it's really delicious too. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Let's move into the final three.
Okay. So the next one is, I don't know if it's really a hidden gem. It's probably the most well-known out of all my hidden gems, but I really love it. It's a place called Lake Te Kapo, which is kind of inland, you know, on the South Island. We're still sort of heading south. And really beautiful little village right on the lake. So in that area, we've got Lake Te Kapo, and then there's Lake Pukaki, which is close by, and they're glacier lakes. And so what that means is like the glacier comes down and then the glacier rocks gets grinded really, really finely, and it creates this, I think they call it like glacier dust or something, and it settles on the bottom of the lakes and then creates these really like intense turquoise colored lakes. And then you've got the mountains around it. And, you know, if you don't come in the height of summer, usually there's like snow on the mountains. It's a really beautiful place, and also one of the best places in the world to see the night sky. They get really clear, really amazing night skies, and there's an observatory. So a really cool place to, you know, just stay up late and watch the stars.
Lovely. Amazing.
All right, two to go. So we're going back further south, but back to the East Coast. There's a little town called Uluru that most people just sort of pass through. But the reason Uluru is worth a stop is that it is the steampunk capital of New Zealand. So for some weird reason, several decades ago, some people in Uluru got into all things steampunk. So there's a steampunk museum, and all throughout town, there's like weird little steampunk elements. They've got a really cool like old town center too. And they just really embrace this whole like steampunk thing. And it's just like, it's weird and quirky, but I love it. I think it's really cool.
That is cool. Who knew?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Who knew? Cool. And so now we're getting to the bottom of the South Island. And there is an area called the Catlins, which is a really great place to travel, especially in a camper van. It's like one of those areas where, you know, within like 100-kilometer stretch, maybe, there's like so much to see, so many, you know, walkways and waterfalls. And there's like something called the Cathedral Caves, which are really massive, you know, cathedral-shaped caves on the beach you can walk into. And, you know, just like one of those really cool areas. But, you know, the reason I like love it, or, you know, sort of a bit of a gem or a hidden gem is there's a place called Curio Bay where I think it must have like one of the highest odds in the world to swim with dolphins. So they've got a local pod of dolphins there, Hector dolphins, which are the little ones that, you know, New Zealand's famous for. And they're local there. And I've been there 3 times now, and 3 times I've gone into the water and either, you know, been swimming or surfing or paddleboarding with dolphins because they're super curious and they come and check you out. And so, you know, and
that's
it's
one of my dreams.
Yeah, I know. So it's super cool.
I want to
swim
with the dolphins, but naturally, I've heard that people have heard it on the show before if they've listened a lot. Like, that's definitely one of my dreams. Like, I don't want to pay to swim with the dolphins for various reasons, but I want to be somewhere where I can swim and then they're there.
Yeah,
magically. So that's
Curio
a place.
Bay.
Oh, man.
And I don't want to promise anyone, but, you know, like, there's lots of people who sort of tell stories of, you know, you meet them there. And if you're in the water and, yeah, they're just curious. They come and they, you know, check you out. And it's just a really cool experience. So,
Now we're going to hold you to it, Lisa, because if somebody's listening and they travel many thousands of miles to see these dolphins and they don't show up, I'm sorry. We've got to hold you accountable. No. All right. That was everything, right? Because my handwriting on my notebook here got really messy at the end. Did we hit them all?
Yeah. Well, so that was my 10. Like I said, it wasn't easy to get, you know, down to 10. Usually people just ask for like my favorite 2 or 3 places, which is even harder. But yeah, look, it's honestly, New Zealand's such an amazing place. So much to see, so much to explore. So yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we like top 10 lists here, top 7 lists or whatever people can come with. And thank you for sharing that. And, you know, you have a wealth of experience doing this. So I take these recommendations to heart, and we will. I know I don't normally like list them out, but I think we're going to start doing that. We're just going to put like a disclaimer in the show notes. Like, don't look below this line if you don't want to see the places, but you know, you have to see or hear the stories behind the places. And I mean, this was really eclectic here. You got like the small towns and villages, the French thing, the steampunk thing. You got seals and ocean currents and make your own hot tubs and all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, I'm sold. I'm well, sold. I'm ready to come down.
These are the hidden gems. You know, these are not even the like real official highlights of New Zealand. So,
yeah, I remember a long time reading about the, what's the famous, I know they call it tramping there or trekking. I can't
tramping.
Remember.
Tramping. We call hiking tramping. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're off in multi-day. Is it the Milford track? Is that the famous one?
We've got a few. So we call them the Great Walks, which are, you know, the most, those famous one. And yeah, the Milford one is one of them. Yeah. Which, yeah. Super
Have you
popular.
Done any of them?
Not the full trek, but like day trips on the treks. The issue with these treks, because they're so popular, they book out super fast. So here's another tip, you know, for anyone coming to New Zealand, if you're into tramping and you want to do one of those multi-day trams, you really got to be onto it. Like a lot of the time, you know, bookings open at some point in, you know, June or July for the season. Sometimes they book out within like a day. You know, so you really kind of just got to be on the list and, you know, be ready. And when you're like me and you sort of have, you know, commitment issues and you kind of always just cruise around and don't really know where you'll be when, then, you know, it's really hard to book that far in advance.
Okay. And by booking, do you mean like securing a permit to do it? Or are you talking about actual like accommodations? Because you camp along the way, don't you?
No. So with most of these great walks, you stay in huts. So we've got little, you know, backcountry huts, which is, you know, just like one step up from camping. You still need a sleeping bag and everything, but, you know, you get a roof over your head. And then with some, so for example, the Milford track, actually, you also need to get on a boat. So the boat, you know, drops you off at the start of the track and then you walk back. And there's a couple of those, you know, as well. So yes, you have to, you know, you have to book. But there's lots of other awesome trams in New Zealand where you don't have to book and you can just bring your tent or, you know, even like just book huts last minute. It's just the great walks that are, you know, this kind of popular.
Okay, sure. That's a great tip. So people research the great walks and find out when they open up for bookings and put that on your calendar then so you can be on the ball. You just kind of said in passing, you know, I'm afraid of commitment. I'm traveling around, so I haven't been able to do this. But you have made some commitments. I mean, you've committed to New Zealand. It seems like you've committed to, you know, writing, and you've written this book, Life Done Differently. I want to talk a bit about that. And another thing that I haven't really talked about on the show, and I got this in the email advance, that you committed to being child-free by choice. And, you know, I'm sure there's people listening that are either debating that or maybe they've committed to it. And we try to share as many perspectives as possible here. And that's something we haven't talked about. So is it okay if you kind of share your perspective on that choice?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of how it all started for me. I was 6 years ago, I was 33. All my friends were getting married and having kids. And you know, even though I sort of loved seeing it, and it just, I didn't feel drawn to it. But at the time, I was just, you know, sort of thought, oh, maybe it's just a not yet kind of thing. But I really just started to ask myself, what else do you do? You know, what do you do with your life if you don't want to do the traditional, you know, get married, have kids, have a family thing? And that's kind of how it all started. And it's like, oh, I'm going to live in a van and travel. And then doing that, just, you know, it really changed my perspective on so many things and really made me, you know, realize how much I value freedom and adventure and this ability to take risks and, you know, make these decisions that I guess in a way are, you know, risky, but because it's just me, they're really not, right? But if I had kids or a family to look after, you know, you would think twice before you quit a job and live in a van or, you know, at the moment I'm a full-time house sitter. So I just, you know, look after people's houses and pets and move every 4 weeks or so. And you know, it's, and I love that I'm able to do that. And so, you know, realizing all of that about myself, just, you know, through the journey that I was on, I ultimately, you know, came to a point where I was like, no, this is actually, you know, it's not a, I don't want kids yet. I actually, you know, don't want to commit to that at all.
Okay. And did you find it helpful to actually make that commitment, kind of that mindset shift fully, instead of yeah, being in the middle, kind of a debate mode, let's call it.
Yeah, definitely. Like there was a, it was just always on my mind. And, you know, we, unfortunately, like it or not, as a woman, there is a time limit, right? Like we have a, I hate the term biological clock, but, you know, there is a, the fact is that, you know, you can't just, most women can't just at 50, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I want a, oh, now I want a kid. And so I knew that, you know, if it is something that I want, then I need to, you know, start working towards that and, you know, find a husband and do the things you got to do. And so then, you know, coming to that realization and feeling so at peace with that and so, you know, just having that knowledge and that inner confidence that was the right decision for me was, it was awesome. It was just a, you know, weight off my shoulder and now means that I'm really, you know, ready to embrace all the possibility and the options that I have in life because of that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. There's a lot of power in making a decision. I think you can, I know in the past for me personally, I had sometimes some struggle with making decisions, but then when I was able to do a better job of that, it's just more clear what once you make a commitment or make a decision on what, you know, okay, you're like, all right, I'm not like halfway on this path or that path or like these five paths at once, splitting my body into five parts. I'm actually just like going to go down this path and let's see what happens. And it just, it's in a way, the constraint is liberating. I'm not saying this is a constraint for you. I'm just, you know, talking about decision-making in general.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. That commitment just opens up things in a way, you know, it sounds like sometimes it can sound counterintuitive, like, right? Like if you're committing to something, you're eliminating all other options, you know, depending on what somebody's thinking. But I think I find it to be the reverse in some ways. Committed to writing this book, or you're writing, and this is your third book, I think, right? This one's called Life Done Differently, One Woman's Journey on the Road Less Traveled. It's a lot of effort to write a book. So why did you do it?
I've always loved writing, and it's like, for me, it's like a way of, you know, processing and thinking. And and the way it started was that, you know, last year I was getting to a point where I sort of, you know, I think I'm going to take a break from van life. I think I'm going to do something else for a while. And that sort of led to me, you know, now house sitting full time. I really miss the van, so I might have one again soon, but it's a different story. But I was sort of in that situation. I was like, man, these, you know, I've been on this amazing journey for 5 years, and I just wanted to, I guess, reflect on that and relive that and really make sure that I, you know, appreciate it for what it was. And so for me, the natural way to do that is to write about it. And so that's how it started. Like originally, you know, especially this book was really just, writing for myself. And then it turned into a book from there. And I started to get, you know, some really good feedback on it. And you know, honestly, I think the world needs more stories from people doing things differently and just sort of showing that, you know, sometimes it can feel like there's only one way to do life well, when in reality, you know, there's so many different ways to have an awesome life. And I think it's really important to share these stories. And, you know, you do that with your podcast, right? Sharing stories from people, all sort of walks of life. And so that's the main reason why I decided to publish it in the end, you know, and because it is a super personal story. So publishing it, was very, you know, very nervous about it. But yeah, I think the world needs more stories and more, you know, examples of people doing things a bit differently.
Are you going to publish it in German too?
People always ask that. I would, you know, the truth is, like, there's no way I could have written this book in German. My German's really bad these days. My family always makes fun of me.
Oh, really? That's surprising.
Look, it would be awesome if it, you know, it's been doing really, really well. Like, so far, it's exceeded expectations. So if that continues, then I'd definitely be keen to translate it into other languages for sure.
Yeah, cool. We didn't talk much about solo travel. Were you doing a lot of this solo as a solo traveler? Or?
Yeah, like 99%. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about that, because I know that's a, you know, that's an experience I can't have, solo female travel, right? solo travel in New Zealand, whatever you want to share around solo travel, like what has it done for you personally traveling solo? And yeah, you can share some tips after that. But yeah, what does solo travel do for your soul?
Yeah. Like, I think for me, so I'm someone who is very good doing things on her own. I always have been, you know, I'm someone who really, I guess, sort of thrives in solitude. So I know for a lot of people, it's a very scary idea to, you know, travel alone. I find the idea of like traveling in a small camper van with someone else scarier than traveling on my own. So, you know, I think I'm very good at that. New Zealand's also, you know, a very safe place to travel alone, you know, especially as a female. I find, you know, it actually, and I used to travel occasionally like solo, you know, before van life, like internationally. And I always found it's actually easier to meet people when you're traveling on your own than when you're in a group. You know, you seem sort of more approachable. And I've met some really awesome, you know, people because, you know, they're on their own, you're on your own, and then you just, you know, get together and you spend the day together or two. So I think that's an advantage of solo travel as well. And yeah, and in terms of tips, you know, I did think about it at the beginning and, you know, is it safe what I'm doing? And I think ultimately, you know, living in a van on my own, I don't think it's any less safe than living in a city on my own. You know, if anything, city is probably riskier. But I did take a few, you know, sort of small precautions. Like one thing that was really important to me when I bought my van is that you can like walk through so you can get from the bed into the driver's seat. So if I would ever feel unsafe, you know, at night or even during the day, you know, I could just get from my bed or the couch into the driver's seat and take off. I never needed to, you know, but sort of the knowing that I could was good. And, you know, so those sort of little things I think you can, you know, do to, yeah, just, you know, make you feel safer.
Yeah. Okay. Did you find that the, how was the community? I was going to ask about the community of travelers. I'm sure you're running into other camper vanners and other independent travelers. How is that community?
Yeah, it's awesome. Like it's one of the things that I love about the life. So is you meet people. Well, I feel like I've met so many people and had really awesome conversations with people that I probably wouldn't have met in normal life. You know, from the young tourists from all over the world that, you know, come to New Zealand and travel here to like the typical. The whole like traveling in a motorhome or caravan is super popular among retirees in New Zealand. So there's, you know, lots of older people on the road that I met. And, you know, you can like learn a lot from conversations with, you know, people sort of twice your age or, you know, a bit less. And so really, you know, I think it's one of the great things about it. It really exposed me to a very diverse community that, yeah, I wouldn't have necessarily touched path with otherwise. And I've always, you know, like I said, I'm quite introverted in that way and, you know, like my own company, but I've always felt like whenever I did want community and, you know, at campgrounds, you always sort of have a chat with your neighbors. And then every now and then you meet someone that, you know, you maybe travel with for a day or two or, you know, just share a drink or a meal with. And yeah, had so many amazing conversations. It's really awesome.
It's pretty interesting because, you know, a lot of people I talk to are nomadic like you, but they go from country to country. And a lot of people that I talk with that have been in the same country for many, many years live somewhere because they moved there, but you move somewhere and you're nomadic in that country. You didn't move there because like you wanted to live in some specific community. You're still traveling around. It's yeah. Wow. It's different.
Yeah. 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 I just, you know, wait till you come to New Zealand, you'll get it. You know, you'll get it.
Are you going to, do you think you're going to pick a place to live in New Zealand at some point?
Yeah, I think I will eventually. And, you know, the biggest downside of this lifestyle for me is that it is so hard to really have that community around you. So you meet amazing people and you connect, but it's always in passing, you know, you always like by nature, everyone's always on the move and it's really hard to organize people and meet up regularly. And so I do sometimes, you know, miss, you know, being in a more stable community, getting involved, you know, like doing a cause, volunteering, having like your local coffee shop and those sort of things. So, you know, I do think that eventually I will have, you know, ideally I would have a base somewhere and then I can still travel a lot, but I have that base to come back to. That would be the ideal scenario.
It is the natural life cycle of a nomad, right? At some point I've heard this many times, and many friends over the years have done the same thing I have, which after a period of time, they, some of us, for me, like 10 years, some people 5 years, 3 years, whatever. And then they just crave the sort of the everyday life kind of thing, which seems ironic because that's what you left. But then there's beauty in both sides.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. And I also think, you know, different things at different times in your life, you know, I could see myself, you know, have a base somewhere for, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, and then have another chunk of time on the road again. And, you know, you just, yeah.
If you couldn't live in New Zealand, where would you live? Like, they kick you out tomorrow.
Oh my God, don't say that. That's like nightmare scenario. I'd be like...
Sorry, because they actually could. Yeah, that's true. You're not a citizen, but they're not going to kick you out. I'm not putting out that vibe to the universe, but, you know, let's just pretend this is a hypothetical.
I've put up a fight. Good question. I mean, I've always sort of felt drawn to Scandinavia, actually, you know, like the Norway, Sweden, you know, I think it has a lot sort of in common with New Zealand in terms of being very nature focused and, you know, very lifestyle focused. So that could be something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. So we'll see you in Norway if you get, but it's not going to happen though. Don't worry. Self-publishing a book. Do you have, what's your best advice for that?
Ooh, good question. So I think the biggest thing is that my first two books were with traditional publishers and the third one is self-publishing. And I think the biggest thing I've learned regardless is like the importance of marketing. You know, you can publish your book, but unless you find a way to reach, you know, readers and people know about it, it's kind of just forgotten because there's like hundreds of books published every day probably these days. So so that's the thing. The self-publishing specifically is, I would say, it's super accessible these days, which is awesome. But if you want to do it well, you have to put in a lot of time, like, and a lot of effort. You know, I did some, yeah, like crazy hours. I probably spent more time now publishing and promoting the book than I spent writing it. So yeah.
Right on. Okay. Yeah. That's for some people, that's the fun part. For other people, it's the not so fun part, right? Thinking about the marketing, but cool. Thanks. Do you want to leave us with is there a New Zealand saying that you like a little something local that people say that get a little bit of wisdom or something like that you can leave us with?
A little bit of wisdom. Gosh.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is one. Can't think of one. Like, oh, you know, we're sweet as sort of the, you know, bye, sweet as, see you later.
Nice. Okay. Well, we can say that. Thanks for taking the time to share your tips. Yeah. Good luck with the book. Of course, we'll link up to all this stuff, as I mentioned, and your book, Life Done Differently. Thanks, Lisa. Yeah. I hope we can stay in touch.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Awesome to have a chat. And if you do ever make it down to New Zealand, let me know.
Absolutely. I want to swim with those dolphins.
And generally, you know, anyone who's like seriously thinking about New Zealand and you've got questions, please do reach out. My website's lifedonedifferently.com. And you've got, you know, contact me there. Happy to answer questions, give tips, help people out.
Perfectly. Perfect. I was just going to ask you that. So cool. Yeah, best place to find you on your website. Great. Yeah. We'll link up to it all. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
There you have it. I want to thank Lisa Jansen once again for stopping by the show. Of course, her website and all of the goodies are linked up in the show notes. It's always such a pleasure to hear about people's unconventional lifestyle. I mean, I've been doing this for 11 years now. It never gets old. I love to hear people's stories. And if you have a story you want to share or you just want to get in touch, perhaps share some tips with the community here, I'm available. This is a two-way conversation, listener over there. You can always email me, jason@zerototravel.com. You can leave me a voicemail. I have a link to that in the show notes to my voicemail box. And sign up for our free newsletter over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. I send one out once a week. Travel tips, musings, cool links, all that good stuff. Now, at the top, I talked about something that Lisa said in this interview. It was a reminder to me of something not to do in life because I believe that doing it can have severe consequences. And the thing that sparked this thought was when Lisa was talking about how she was telling her boss that she was going to go in travel and sort of lived this unconventional life. And they offered some hours to her, some freelancing hours. They offered her some work. And you can imagine going into a conversation like that with your boss, or, I mean, there are a variety of examples we can use here, where we as humans tend to build up these ideas of what is going to happen, as if we can predict the future. This is called making assumptions, right? This is what we should not do. We should not make assumptions. We shouldn't assume that people will, for example, in this example, see our remote work lifestyle as a negative thing. As Lisa said, that was something that people always were curious about. Hey, where are you at nowadays? And, you know, the clients she's working with see that as a positive. And I mean, that example is becoming more and more common. But when it comes to just making assumptions, you never know, right? You might assume that you can't afford a certain place that you really want to visit. And yet, you know, once you dig in and maybe open up the mind to some different alternative travel lifestyles or different ways you could do it, perhaps you actually can. It's easy for us as humans to equate uncertainty with risk because we don't know what's happening. So therefore, it must be risky and we can make all these assumptions and we build up all these ideas. But I don't think it's healthy. And I go on these rants to remind myself, but then I share them with you, and maybe it strikes a chord with you. It's just something I don't want to do in life, to make these assumptions. And it's a constant battle. I think it's important to always challenge your mind to stay open. This is one way to do it, because I feel like we naturally make assumptions. So anyway, if you have some assumptions that you think you're making about things that are preventing you from doing said things, then here's your call to action to not make those assumptions. Don't equate uncertainty with risk. Perhaps linking uncertainty with joy or focusing on some of the positive things that can happen instead of making assumptions and thinking we can predict the future. It could be a way forward or a way out or a way through a problem or a mindset you might be stuck in or something like that. And again, this is as much for me as it is for anybody listening here. So anyway, just wanted to share that before I let you go. I will leave you with a quote that I'm going to pull out of the good old quote drawer. Let's see what we got here today. Okay, well, this is an interesting one from Swami Vivekananda, who said, "The world is the great gymnasium where we come to make ourselves strong." Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Peace and love to you and yours. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.